G'day, boys and girls. Welcome to episode 5 of the Has Been Hoops podcast. I am Mark Worthington. I'm here with my good mate, Chris Anstey. You're still in the States, big fella. Whereabouts are you now? What have you done? Tell us all.
I'm back in New York City. We spent the day at Rucker Park. Freezing cold. We had some NBL names. We went at it a little bit. James Harvey, Mitch Hill, Cam Rigby, myself, and a few others who played okay. So it was nice to get down there. Fair to say the standard wasn't very good, but of course, a whole lot of our trip to most people seeing the actual NBA games. We caught a Knicks game last night. We got to see Giannis Antetokounmpo in person, and it's actually the first time I've seen him play live. And it was interesting. We had a couple of tour members come up and, yeah, geez, Giannis has been really quiet. He hasn't imposed himself on the game. And, yeah, the Bucks are up a couple. And so just have a look at the scoreboard. And it was 14-8-4 at halftime. He just accumulates when he's not standing out. At the end of the game, you know, with 37-13-7, and all of a sudden the guy's looking, okay, you're right, I see what he does. But he's just the most workmanlike professional superstar. So much of what he does and how he finishes around the rim in person's even more impressive than what it looks like on highlight reels. His length, he uses both hands, and he even knocked down a couple of threes. And I mean, if Giannis starts hitting the three consistently, just stop the NBA. I mean, everyone can get off. He's that good. It's incredible. I'll tell you who else was incredible. It's Paolo Banchero. He's built like LeBron. I didn't realize he was that big. He is an absolute monster. And we saw him play against the Brooklyn Nets, and he was super, super impressive. And you can see why they drafted him at number one, the Orlando Magic, over Chet Holmgren, who's clearly out and will miss the rest of this year. But Paolo was really impressive. But I want to talk about the Nets a little bit, and we've seen them a couple of times now.
Before you do, Chris, can I ask one question?
Sure.
You talked about names that went and played at Rucker Park or out on the streets. Who was your Uncle Drew out of all those former NBL names that you mentioned? Who was the guy that you go, he's still got a little bit of game? And feel free to say yourself if it's you.
No, but, it wasn't me. You know what? The one who probably took the most shots out of that group was James Harvey.
And I was about to say, it had to be halves.
He still likes going left. I challenged him to take a dribble right and shoot one in. He was a little bit concerned that the scouting report was still accurate. Larry Agee, who's the court announcer for Rucker Park for the last 9 years, he came and spent time with the group. And there's actually a nice little video we just put on social media, and he did a great job. But he dragged out Cam Rigby and James Harvey, and he commentated their real quick one-on-one battle. And a lot of things happened at Rucker Park today that Rucker Park's never seen before. There were free throw shots, and Cam Rigby caught the ball outside the three-point line and just started backing James Harvey down. It was very, very funny. And Harvey's back's still not great, so Rig moved him a little bit, but their little one-on-one battle with running commentary from Mike Lowry was really, really fun. But the other thing I did today, which was nice, and I'll pick up the name in a second, but had lunch with my old mate Steve Nash, and it was really good to see him after being released from the Brooklyn Nets, and hadn't seen him in a lot of years. And we found a little pub. We sat there for a couple of hours, and we got into a lot about the Nets that I won't get into on this, but his perspective remains fascinating. And I guess what I will say is that Steve's going to coach in the NBA again. He'll have a team around him that he's going to put together himself. He'll pick a situation that suits him better than and probably with the person that whose personality suit his personality better. And you know, we had a lot in common where, you know, we agreed that probably when we both started our coaching career, we let a few things go early days that we probably shouldn't have, and they were a little bit hard to pull back. And he was a little bit the same, but we had a really good chat about coaching and leadership, and we caught up. We're actually going to go and have a game of tennis next week, which will be fun. But the Brooklyn Nets, I like having a bet on sport. The Brooklyn Nets, in a lot of people's minds, are one of those teams who could come out of the East. There's no chance. There's not a chance in the world that the Brooklyn Nets can get out of the East. Again, you watch multiple games and you speak to enough people. Kevin Durant's all about himself. Kyrie Irving, it's oil and water with him and the rest of the team. We spoke really glowingly about Ben Simmons last week, but you know, there's still concern about his work rate and his love of the game. And Luke Longley spoke about that a few weeks back. And then you've got Patty Mills, who didn't play a minute the last game we went and saw. He's being picked on in mismatches. He's getting a little bit older. And you know, a lot of those guys, as a result of their top three guys, want to move. Joe Harris wants out. I can only imagine Patty Mills would like to be somewhere where he's valued more highly and where he's able to play to prepare himself for next year in the Olympic Games and the World Cup that are coming up, because I know how much that means to him. But the friction in that club and the vibe around the stadium, you know, we had back-to-back nights. One of them was at the Barclays Center. One of them was at Madison Square Garden. Now, the Nets are a better team standing-wise than the Knicks. The atmosphere at Madison Square Garden watching the Knicks is 10 times better than going to the Barclays. It's like a morgue. There's a few oohs and ahs when Kyrie and Kevin Durant make their one-on-one moves, but the ball doesn't move. It's my turn, your turn. It's all one-on-one. It's all ISO. They don't defend until they have to, until a team like Orlando sticks around and then they go a little bit crazy. And I mean, they're exceptionally talented, but until they're able to probably get their egos in check and understand that those three guys need the other nine that are wearing a Brooklyn Nets uniform, they are so far off being a contender right now. But no, it's been a fascinating watch being over. You don't pick that one up. I want to switch tack a little bit, and I'll tell you who has been impressive. Dyson Daniels. Since Thanksgiving, the last three games, he's taken a step. He's been outstanding. The Pelicans are playing him 31 minutes a game, his last three, and he's averaging 10, 6, and 4. Flirted with the triple-double in 31 minutes last game. I'm not sure how much of him you've seen, but I'm sure you've seen a little bit.
Yeah, I saw the highlights the other day. I think he had the 14, 9, and 8 game. And it was interesting hearing Zion talk about his thoughts on Dyson's game and where he's going and how he's become a real solid piece for the club going forward. He you can see him develop. And like most rookies, you see some rookies start off really, really strongly and then tail off on the back end of the season. You see some rookies pick it up and figure out where they fit. I think the good about Dyson is he's in a position where he can help a team without having to be the person to drive the team. Very, very different to a situation that Josh found himself in at OKC, where he knew that he was going to be able to go through the growing pains with a team that's not going to win very much and feel confident enough to do what he does. But Dyson has always just been a really solid player. Before he got to the NBA, you talk to anyone, he was a pro's pro before he got to the NBA. So for him to start to figure it out, I don't think comes to a surprise to many that actually know him as a basketball player, because he works on his game. He treats it like a business, his job. And I think we're just starting to scratch the surface of what he's going to be able to do in the NBA, which is a really cool thing for Australian basketball to watch.
You mentioned some rookies coming and hit the wall, and we had this moment a couple of weeks ago. I don't think I mentioned it on the pod, but we sat and we watched Josh Giddey play against the Washington Wizards on a freezing cold winter's night on a Wednesday night.
Go Wiz. Go Wiz.
Go, and well, it was the game where Shai Gilgeous-Alexander hit the game key to win by a point. Your mate Tommy Shepherd was incredible on that night, and he looked after our group. But the stadium, you know, I mentioned the Met Stadium, and there's a lot of people who watch the NBA as casual observers, or they've got league pass, they'll watch ESPN, they'll watch sports, and they'll see the highlights. But this was a what I perceived to be a real NBA game, and it was kind of, it reminded me of my NBA experience. You know, I played on two really bad teams, and we played clearly against a lot of bad teams, and we'd get to these midweek games, and just like this OKC Wizards game, there might have been 8,000 people in a 20-something thousand-seat stadium. There was no atmosphere. Again, it was freezing cold. Just like an old Jim Bounce, two league pass teams. These teams don't get on ESPN much, and fans won't come out to watch OKC when they're living in Washington and they've got other things to do. And there were a few comments around our group about, geez, the team is not popular. What happened here? They really, that's the NBA. You know, the Steph Currys, the Giannis's, the Ja Morant's, the Luka Doncic's, they prop up these teams on weekends when they come to town, on ESPN, on League Passage. They make the money for these games to, or for these teams to stay afloat. So it was just a really interesting night going back and remembering, because everybody asked me, and they expected me to say the NBA is incredible, it's fantastic, and it is. But it's a grind when you're turning up to half-empty stadiums. You don't know anyone in the stands. It feels like no one cares about the game. You're not expected to make playoffs, so even the club doesn't really care if you win or lose. And for me, when you mentioned hitting that rookie wall, Dyson is in a unique situation where the Pelicans will be fighting for a playoff berth, and they've got a lot of people coming to the games to see his teammates right now. But yeah, I'll be fascinated to see how Josh ends this season. He'll tell you, he told us on his dinners that we held, that he hit that wall and he hit it hard. And it took him about a month and a half to recover in his rookie season. So I'm fascinated to see how he handles year two.
What else you got for us over there, mate? Anything else that has pricked your ears up or you want to talk about?
No, look, just another really nice one for me was those who've heard my story, and I wrote about it in the book. The way I met Leon Rose, who's a president of the Knicks, is through Rick Brunson, who was playing for Mike Dunlap. Brian Gorgian introduced me, and at that Bucks game against the Knicks, it was the first time in 20-something years that we'd had Leon, myself, and Mike Dunlap in the same room. So that was a really nice little thing to share with our group. You know, sort of 25 years of basketball journeys come together, and we all had that special moment. We enjoyed sharing that story, and now it's nice to connect in person. You've heard me tell the story a million times. It was nice to be able to do it with the two people. The only one we're missing, of course, is Gorge, but to do it with two of those people, and of course with Rick in the room as well, I should add, as an assistant coach of the Knicks. So to have four of the five people who were instrumental in getting me an agent and getting me to the NBA were in one room. So that was special. But now, what about yourself? I know you've got some stories. We talked about going through our phone, and you mentioned one at the start and you thought it might be relevant, but I've name-dropped Dirk and Steve enough the last couple of weeks, but I know you had a Dirk Nowitzki story that you wanted to share.
Yeah.
I hope we don't have a photo of, because it probably wouldn't be good.
No, you're right. We do not have a photo of it, but it was leading into the World Champs in 2006. We'd sort of called a Boomers team meeting to indulge in a few refreshments before the World Champs had started. And we basically had everyone in the room. having a couple of drinks, and we ran out of said drinks, and so I said I'll go source some more refreshments. And as I walked out my door, the door of the room next to me was open, and it turned out to be Germany's physio that was in the room next to us. And there on the table was Dirk sitting there getting some treatment. And I might have had a couple of refreshments at this stage. So I walked straight into the room and I just said, "Dirk, you're German. We're Australian. We like to drink. Maybe you want to pop next door after you've had some treatment and come have a drink with us." Now, many people in the Boomers team knew that Dirk was my favorite player at that stage. So I made no bones about it. And Dirk said, I'll be in after treatment," which I thought, there's no way he's doing that. Lo and behold, maybe 20 minutes later, there's a knock at the door. Dirk walks in, sits down, and has a beer with us for the next 2 hours. And, and I know you know this, but a lot of the NBA guys get carried away in their own hype. Dirk is one of the most natural, down-to-earth human beings. Like, there's no surprise to me that you and Dirk and you and Steve are mates, because you're all sort of the same sort of person when it's down to earth and all that. And there's no way you could know that Dirk was, unless you see him in person, see how tall he is and what he does on a basketball court. But he is one of the most genuine human beings. He answered all our questions. He just sat there. He was willing to have a laugh. He was willing to tell stories. And it just always resonated with me that, like, I'm sure he's been asked a million times before for someone saying, "Come have a beer with us." But the fact that he stayed there for about 2 hours, told stories, and he had the whole room captivated, you know, we were all waiting for everything that he was saying. And it was really, really cool. So I'm looking forward to him coming to Australia. I'm looking forward to him telling the stories, some of the stories that we heard, plus more of stories since we met him that day. But just a real genuine down-to-earth person that Australia is very lucky to have coming down under to listen to him talk.
It's an incredible story, an incredible plug for the tour. So thanks for that. You're right. I can't wait to get him down here. And so that's enough of the NBA word. You've had your eye on the NBL. Start with New Zealand.
Yeah, I like this 50-50 split that we've got going right now of you and the NBA and me and the NBL. New Zealand Breakers. They are the best team in the NBL. Now, if the New Zealand Breakers were was Melbourne United or the Perth Wildcats, we'd talk about them every week. And that's exactly what we're going to do, because they are the best team. They've scored over 100 points in the last two games. They smacked Brisbane. They smacked the Phoenix, who was supposed to be their greatest challenge in the last couple of weeks. But, man, you've got to love the way that they're playing. You've got to have passion. If you're going to go to play New Zealand, you've got to be able to dive on all the loose balls, and you better shoot well, because their defense is rock solid at the moment. Derek Pardon maybe had his colors lowered slightly by Alan Williams. Big Sauce had a fantastic game against New Zealand, but Derek Pardon is just a rock in that center position. Brantley, that undersized four, shooting at a great clip from three. I think he's over 40% from three at the moment. But it's the strength to be able to go against a Mitch Creek on the inside and post him up as well. I think he's been really solid. Will McDowell-White, I just love his progression in all of this. And it's funny, they say, you know, they said this year that he'd have the keys to the car. I think it's been a really good mixture of Liatha, Will McDowell-White, and then Brown coming off the bench. They've managed to really work that trio out of when to play them together, who gets the rock when. Brown's been fantastic coming off the bench. There's just so much to like about the New Zealand Breakers at the moment. We'll park that to the side. Cairns Taipans, another team. These two teams were the bottom two teams last year. They beat Sydney's, they break Sydney's road streak off the back of DJ Hoag in the late stages. But no one's talked about this. Bull Quoll, his defense, the entire game, up the court on Walton. Now, there wasn't a myriad of turnovers, but he set the tempo for Cairns defensively the entire game. I loved what he did defensively. I think his shooting stroke, while it's not where it was last year, I think it will slowly get around. But, man, the Taipans and the Breakers are the two most exciting teams in the NBL at the moment, and I just love watching those two teams play. New Zealand, very defensive-oriented. Cairns, very offensive-oriented. But even and we saw New Zealand get the chocolates against them the other week, but just exciting brands of basketball.
Well, on the flip side of that, with the play-in this year, six teams are going to make it in to have a shot at the finals, but for the second year in a row, Perth on the outside looking in. You mentioned a couple of pods ago that you thought they needed to shake up their roster. They haven't done that yet. You've watched them pretty closely over there in WA. What do they need to do to get better? Or are we going to look at a Perth Wildcats club that's going to miss the playoffs for 2 years straight? Because you look above them, Adelaide are extraordinarily talented. Tasmania are tough. Southeast Melbourne, and you've just mentioned Canada and New Zealand. There's going to be, and Melbourne is on the outside looking in too. So Perth are really looking down the barrel of not making the playoffs for the second year in a row.
Well, they've got a deficiency on the rebounding side of things. Their defense is poor, and I put rebounding as part of that. But I watched the game last night, and before we touch more on Perth, Sammy Mack, congratulations.
Yeah, good on you, Sammy.
With the Brisbane, with an undermanned Bullets team, no Baines, no Terrell Harrison, Tanner Krebs. Does a bad ankle, and he was playing well. And I liked what Sammy did with Tanner. He played him as a four last night. And I was around Tanner when he was at St. Mary's, when I was at Loyola Marymount, and that's the position he played. He was an undersized four man that could stretch the floor and take people off the dribble, playing next to Jock Landale. I thought that was a really smart move going against the Wildcats. But Brisbane smashed Perth on the rebounds, and especially late game, off a free throw, putting Harry Froehling, tipping it back in to tie the game up. Kudos to Brisbane. So Brisbane and Melbourne are the two teams below Perth at the moment. I feel Melbourne are in the process of making a few roster changes again.
Yes.
To get to where they need to get to. I feel like Brisbane are in the process of making roster changes to get to where they're going to get to.
Yes.
So if Perth doesn't make a roster change, and this is, in previous years, I would have held my tongue at this stage saying, it's Perth is Perth, they'll figure it out, yada, yada. You've already mentioned the teams that are above them. I've mentioned the two teams, two of the three teams that are below them. I think they're the second worst team in the competition right now.
Well,
I think Illawarra is struggling at 1-10, but the Wildcats are definitely struggling at 5-7 with no defensive blueprint, with no intent to rebound. Like, Brisbane's defense was no better, but you take Baines and Terrell Harrison out of that lineup, that's two solid anchors in the center position to meet people at the rim. Last night was a bit of a layup fest. It was poor defensively, really, really poor. Perth really had no excuses to be poor.
It's like, I think only now are people realizing just how great Damian Martin was. I mean, we always spoke about it, but now we're seeing it. And sometimes, like Gorge leaving Illawarra, it wasn't the fact that you realize how great a coach Gorge is when he leaves and players leave with him. System Damian Martin, the second he walked away from Perth, they lost that edge, that toughness, that big guard on the offensive glass who bothers you every minute of the game. That doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. Well, I do have my own theories on road victories, but I'd say Mitch Norton, I love Mitch Norton as a player. I think he's very, very solid. But you can see potentially his body's starting to fail him a little bit.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Damian Martin. I'll mention Greg Heyer.
Sure.
Because he brought an edge of toughness to that bench crew. And I just don't see who that is coming off the bench. But he, like Greg Heyer knew if the energy was low or there was something, he would dive on a loose ball. He would take a charge. He would, you know, get an offensive rebound. He would do whatever that dirty stuff, and I say dirty in a good way, like the down and dirty stuff, to get his team to lift to another level. Who does Perth currently have that's willing to do that dirty stuff? I don't see it. I think they need to change their starting lineup. They've already put Jesse Wagstaff in for Manic, but I think there has to be a question on Todd Blanchfield moving forward as a starter. Yeah. I'd put Luke Travers in there. What have you got to lose by putting Luke Travers in there? But these are all things that JR, I'm sure, is frustrated about, that he's trying to figure out. And as a first-time head coach, I'm sure there's plenty of stuff that he's learning on his journey as well at the end of the day.
The word that you probably didn't mention that was the one on the top of my list, they have no physicality. And I'll throw another name at you, Matt Knight. Yeah, a guy like that who you look at a box score and he doesn't stand out, but he does his job every single time and you'll feel him all game long. But look, that's probably enough with the Wildcats. Anything else in the NBL before we wind this one up?
Mate, that is it for now. This has been another solid episode, I'd say. I know we're still... it's going to be better once we're probably back in the same country at the same time, but it's been really good getting your insight of the NBA. And obviously, you've got a fair few contacts over there. And the one thing I like at the moment is, you know, this podcast is doing something a little bit different. We can deep dive into the NBA a little bit more than what others can, and we can deep dive into the NBL a little bit more than what others can. And, it's only going to get better from here.
We'll start planning some of these instead of figuring out a couple of hours beforehand what we're going to talk about. But
hours.
Minutes. The other thing we do want to, hey, we said it was going to, we're going to invite you in for a conversation. Hey, the other thing we want to do, if anyone's out there listening and you've got any questions for Werther or I, hit us up on the socials. We'd love to get through some of them next week. We'll get back to our top 10 list. That's it for today. Werdo, thanks, mate. I'm off to a country music bar with some of the guys on this tour group. We'll talk about country music some other time. One more episode from the States. I'll be back in town.
Beautiful, mate. Can't wait.
Go on, Werdo.